Well, thanks for the opportunity to talk to you about when we should be cutting off irrigation in cotton and doing that with different soils of different water holding capacities. Before I get started, a lot of this work, most work we do can't be done with other people, so I'd like to recognize, in addition to myself, Tim Grant from the UT Biosystems Engineering and Soil Science Department at Knoxville, and also Tyson Raper, where the work was done out at the West Tennessee Research and Education Center in Jackson, Tennessee. Also, financial support is important. We had some from Cotton Inc. and the NRCS Conservation Innovation Grant was important in doing this work. A little bit of background. Try to summarize some work we've done from 2010 to 2014. But in fact, we've done irrigation initiation and timing, rate and timing work, even starting in 2006 on a single good water holding capacity soil. But in 2010 and 2014, we started looking at the variable soils. And it's just a quick overview of what we found is that in some wet years, we didn't even need to irrigate the deeper silt loam soils because there was enough water stored in the soil that irrigation wasn't necessary, while at the same time, the shallower sandy soils required irrigation during those 2010, 13, and 14. During bloom, we didn't really need to get it on during square, but then when we got on, we needed to get on a fairly high rate at 1.5 inches per week for those three wet years. And then in the two drier years, the 2011 and 2012 that we had, irrigation was needed in our deeper soils. We could sometimes wait to bloom in 2011, but even in 2012, it was really hot and dry early. We got it started in square. Whereas in those drier years, we did need a high rate in the sandy soils at square right off the bat. So one thing I didn't mention in this slide, that if we over-irrigated, put more water on earlier at higher rates than needed, sometimes we did lose yield potential too. So over-irrigation was a problem. So I guess what I'm saying, with 9 years of data, I'm wondering why we didn't finish with 10. We decided it was time to switch to see how we end the season instead of how we begin and how we irrigate. I guess the rule of thumb, especially for sprinklers, has been work with cracked bowl. You should stop at that time. We don't really want to put water in open bowls. So in setting up this new experiment, again, I should go back. I showed you a picture of a pivot. 95% of the acreage irrigated in Tennessee is pivots. But to do this work, we like to work with drips so we can do a lot of small plots and change a lot of things around. So again, we use the USB tape, I guess it's called Revilis now. We use just one rate now because we felt more confident about how much water we wanted to put on, so we used the 2.2 gallon per minute per 100 feet. We decided to shoot for about one, when we started here, to shoot for about 1.5 inches per week and then adjust for rainfall, of course. But we thought we'd be starting the sand earlier, then the intermediate soil, and then the deep soil a little bit later. But as it turned out, in 2015, we had a lot of rainfall early, so we ended up partially into bloom. We started them all at about the same time, so that's not quite according to plan. But then, as you look at the table below, this is what we did once we got it all started in irrigating. How we ended was different. And we have kind of two controls. If you look at treatment 7, that's rain-fed, no irrigation. But then also, if you look at treatment 3, or 4, I should say, that's the normal place we stopped, kind of normal irrigation up to crack bowl and then cease. But onto that, we said, well, let's look at what happens if we pull off water, that's treatment 1 and 2, earlier, and then what if we let water go a little later, that's treatments 5 and 6, and see what happens. In addition to that, we did something called extra water. So during all those three times where we could turn off the water, 2 weeks prior to that, we might start adding extra water. I guess, I don't see a cursor here, maybe there is one, but I guess you can see above, we use the little valves to determine when to turn off each irrigation treatment. And I don't have a picture of it, we need to get one, but how we put on extra water is for those 2 weeks prior to turn off, we put a second drip tape on the other side. As you see that lower picture, we put a second drip tape. So we'd kind of double the water for 2 weeks prior to that. So you'd think that it would come out with, when you turn off early, that you'd have less water, but with that extra water, say that treatment 1, because it was drier during that period and we doubled the water up, we had more water than, say, treatment 3, which doesn't, you'd think wouldn't happen, but could happen because we had more rainfall during that period. So you get a look. Normally we'd have put on about 3.5 inches of water at crack bowl with no extra water, but we went up to as high as 5.4 inches by going later and putting on extra water during these treatments. So I'll give you a little bit of a range for what we did. Again, soils were important. There's just a quick slide up there that shows the sandy soil canopy not developing nearly as well as the one behind it. And so we We use ground-penetrating radar, soil sampling, and Varis EC to delineate all these plots. I'm not going to talk much about that, but we do have these plots all delineated into three soil groups, a low, an intermediate, and a high water-holding capacity. And then we couldn't monitor everything, but we did get seven stations out with a matrix potential sensor from Decagon. It's similar to a watermark in what it reads, but it's a different sensor. It reads matrix potential. And we had those at 6 and 24 inches in seven plots. Just a little bit more about the experiment itself. This was a randomized complete block experiment, but we did, the blocks were the soil types themselves, so that was acted kind of like a treatment effect in itself. We had plots were six rows, standard 38-inch row spacing, two border rows, and they're 30 feet long. The variety was phytogen 33333. And it was planted on May 8th in a no-till system, harvested October 5th with a two-row picker, which means we went through twice. We got in each plot, we got two sets of yield data because there was four rows in between the six, and two outside ones. At this point, we could have asked for the turnout data, but we didn't have that, so we just worked with seed cotton, and we have sent the fiber in for quality analysis, but we do not have that yet either. So. This is the first representation of seed cotton yield. I don't like it in some ways. I saw some people pointing with something. How do you do that? I can't find it here. Maybe because it's white, huh? Okay, and there's no pointer here. But I don't think so. But anyway. Whoops, that sent us to the next slide. I'll show you this slide. It's a little too busy, but I wanted to show you the what kind of mean separation we got, what statistically came out. And so the top one, the top table is of, I think if you look down the left side, you see the treatments 2 weeks prior to crack bowl, and then 2 weeks post crack bowl, and then extra water or not extra water. So you can see our water treatments there on the left. And then if you go over to the far right side, you see the soil is delineated by low water holding capacity, intermediate, and high. So if you look on that top one, this is total yield. You can see pretty quickly that our rain-fed yield was an A treatment, and it was as high as any irrigated treatment in the high water holding capacity soil, and it's equal to a lot of the irrigated treatments. Irrigation didn't hurt us in some cases, but when we applied that extra water, that second drip line, you see a slight drop in yield that was statistical. So we lost some yield by putting extra water on this good soil at the end of the growing season. In the intermediate, you see the rain fed is seed cotton yields, is a little below 3,000, and most of the irrigation yields are above 3,000. Not statistically very clear, but I think since they're all the irrigated yields are higher, you'd say we got some benefit from irrigating towards the end of the season during this fairly wet year. But then when you look at the lowest water holding capacity soils, you can see the rain fed has doubled in some instances by irrigating with quite a bit of water, about 5.4, 4.7 inches. So we got quite a yield bump by adding that water. The second depiction at the bottom is just doing it a little differently, saying what's the difference from rain fed. And some ways that shows up a little better. You can see the high water holding capacity soils. You see some either even numbers or some yield loss. In the intermediate, you can see that slight yield bump from having irrigated towards the end of the season. And then in the low water holding capacity, again, you can see how much we did bump the yields, especially when we used extra water and irrigated 2 weeks past post-bloom. I thought this maybe was an easy way to look at it. Again, I wish I could point, but the blue line is the low water holding capacity soil. If you look at the upper graph, the yellow, orange, or I guess that's an orangish one, is the intermediate, and the gray is the high water holding capacity. And what we did here, I think that makes it easier, is we ranked them from lowest water, not necessarily by treatment like I did in the tables, but lowest water to highest water. So you start the rain fed at zero, and you end with the highest at 5.4. And you can see the low water holding capacity soils, well, each time we add some incremental water, the yield goes up, so it's starting to equal the yields in the other soils. You can see that slight yield bump in the intermediate soil. And you can see this in the high water holding capacity, you see that stable yield when we add some water didn't do any good, but when we add the extra water, you see those three where you see a yes for extra water down at the bottom, you can see those yields dip down, so we had a slight yield loss. And again, we can look at it based on rain fed, but I won't spend much time on that. But I think there's some pretty drastic differences. The other thing I'd like to do with you, I guess I'm not watching my time here, but I'd like to look at some of our water management tools and say, well, what would we have done if we were watching some of these tools, and how might we have responded? And just to get started, I'd like to look at the deep silt loam soil with without irrigation, so the rain fed, just to see what we would have seen. Say if we did a water balance, if you look at the upper left, that's something from a program called MOIST, Management of Irrigation Systems in Tennessee. It's just basically a water balance. And if you look at the upper half of that, the red dots are the weekly water use, and then the blue dots are the weekly rainfall. The dashed line down below is the water depletion from the soil, and then that dark solid line going down is the allowable depletion. Now, in a good deep soil with over 2 inches per foot, we're pulling 3 to 4, maybe 3.5 inches of water. You can see that there's 4 to 5 inches could be possibly pulled out of that soil without yield loss. And so you can see during this 2015 season of that water balance, you can see we really get down to that 4 and 5 inch level right at the end of August and September. So again, if I was looking at this and I was back in late August, mid-August, and I saw us passing 3 heading to 4, I probably would have added some irrigation, or would have recommended my farmers do the same, people that I work with. But as it turned out, that water would not have been necessary. But again, with sprinklers that put on a light amount of water, sometimes I really don't like to see them drag it right down to the bottom of what we think is possible. And then this is the same deep silt loam soil in the rain fed. If we drop over to those MPS2 sensors from Decagon and the matrix potential, you can see a 6-inch in red and a 24-inch sensor in blue. Again, if I look at that, as I look at the first period at the middle to end of July, just the top sensor has gone down, and there's still probably, 60, 70 centibars left in the lower sensor. I probably wouldn't have triggered irrigation. But when we go into the beginning of August period, where both the 6 and 24 are below 100 centibars, I probably would have triggered some irrigation. Maybe not a lot, but I would have triggered some before rainfall brought that soil moisture in the top sensor back up. So in both instances, following our tools, I probably would have recommended and probably would have triggered some irrigation. But we found, as we know from the results, that was not necessary. I have a lot more of these I could show you, but I don't really want to go through all the ones we have because it would probably be kind of tedious. So I'm just going to show you two more results of the MPS2 sensors, or SMP2 sensors. And the top one is, again, in the deep silt loam soil, but this one is when we cut off prior, 2 weeks prior to crack bowl, but we added extra water for the 2 weeks prior to cutoff. So, again, I wish I had a pointer I could point to this, or a laser pointer. But so those two dashed lines indicate the time period where in which we irrigated. And you can see up to that time period, which was bloom, we had no need to irrigate. Even into bloom for a while, we had no need to irrigate. And this is the upper graph. And then I guess this one, you can see when the extra water kicks in about 2 weeks before the later dashed line, you can see we bring both soil sensors back up to fairly wet, and at least one of them is maintained above 60, 50 centibars the rest of the season. So that's more like what we probably think we'd maybe want to see, but you have to realize in this one, in this deep silt loam soil, that there was some yield loss here. Not much, but we lost a little bit of yield by applying that extra water towards the end of the growing season. And then the other one is in the sandy soil, and this one we irrigated past bloom for 2 weeks, but we didn't add any extra water. And we added about 4.5 inches of water here, and we got quite a yield bump over rain fed by doing that. And you can see the dashed lines are a lot further apart because we irrigated over a longer period. But you can see there's several periods where both sensors fall below the negative 100 centibars, which, again, I would have probably added some more irrigation, which, in fact, in the sandy soil, when we did add more water than this particular treatment with the extra water, we did increase yield by doing so. So, again, sensors can drive us to add some more water when we need to. Just one more point before I summarize. If you look at this bottom one and you see how far those are depleted, just go back. This was the sandy with 4.5 inches of irrigation. We go back and look at the rain fed in the deep soil. The sandy one still with irrigation looks a little drier, but it doesn't look that much drier. So there's some indication that we can't always use the same recommendations with matrix potential type sensors. We may have to really reinterpret those a little bit by soil type and what we do with that information. So by way of summary, in this 2015 season, and again, I hope to do this for at least two more years through 17, the deep silt loam soils did not require irrigation to optimize cotton yield. In fact, extra irrigation, the two drip lines instead of one, slightly reduced yield. And the intermediate soil was benefited from end-of-season irrigation, but it's unclear whether the irrigating past crack bowl or adding the extra water was really necessary to get that benefit. Maybe we'll see that more in some drier years in the future. But then when we look at the sandy soil, the cotton yield was benefited by both irrigating past crack bowl and by adding extra irrigation. Okay, so some three drastically different results based on soil type and how we would irrigate them. Some things about the MPS2 sensors seem to measure, and some, especially in the silt loam, seem to measure lower irrigation points than we generally recommend based on watermarks. Again, those sensors can be maybe performing a little bit differently. And interpretation of soil matrix potential may slightly differ by soil type. I guess I already said that. So again, these results may need to be adjusted, I guess we should say, when gin turnout and fiber quality are analyzed for this data set. So I'm not sure if it's going to change the results much, but there might be something there we need to add to this in the future. And we do hope to do this for future years. With that, I'll take any questions if you have any. Did I lose you on the termination? Where we did termination, it's a little bit tricky. I guess I didn't really explain why we decided to add extra water on some. And the reason was sometimes we've been doing deficit irrigation or primed acclimation coming up early in the growing season. So we start out with a low soil moisture profile. And then we hit crack bowl and we're supposed to stop, especially if you're in sprinklers. But I've seen some results in our other work that suggests that we had more soil moisture left. Some of those seem to do better by carrying past crack bowl. So we thought we used the little opportunity we had maybe to add some extra water right before going into crack bowl. Maybe that helped carry us through the end of the growing season. So that's why I forgot to explain why we added some extra water at the end to give us a little better soil moisture profile and see how that carried us through. I'm not getting any questions. Anybody else do any termination work? Everybody satisfied with cracked bowl?
Everybody's hungry.
I was hungry. My stomach was growling, too, when I was sitting down there. All right. Well,
thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you.
So this concludes the morning session of the Cotton Engineering Systems Conference. Thank you all for coming, and be back here at 1:30 for the next session. Same room. Thank you.